WFM. With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the great Jenny Green for kicking off the long weekend. It's Friday, the 2nd of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, well, we should be live at the RDS right now for Leinster versus Toulon. Michael Corcoran is with us to explain why we're not. Plus, there's still a Munster v Toulouse clash to look forward to.
What Munster would give for a Paul O'Connell, a Donnacha O'Callaghan and Alan Quinlan steal now.
The Millennium Stadium rocks once more to the sound of the famous Munster support. And it's all over! And it's Munster over that line again!
Totes and most stunners.
That was a dig deep into the archive, wasn't it? We'll keep going. It's a big night in the League of Ireland. Damien O'Mara and Tony O'Donovan bring us up to speed with the latest from Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk.
Duffy.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is! Absolutely wonder strike at the back post. What a finish, what a corner kick, drilled to the back post, and a hell of a finish. The chance for goal of the season last week. But my God, what a finish. Absolutely splendid goal.
Jane Mangan has news on Tiger Roll, plus Greg Allen brings us up to date as Leona Maguire's form continues into day two at a major.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM and we would love to hear from you. Marie, we did get a bit of a shock. We should be in the middle of the first half of the Heineken Champions Cup game between Leinster and Toulon. But more importantly, we should be enjoying the tone and the beautiful rhythm of the great Michael Corcoran. But there is a silver lining because he does join you in studio. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Donnacha. How are you?
I'm good.
How's the energy level?
Yeah, not bad. I'm not too bad. Corky, I'd say you're annoyed, though, because this was a big game and we were all looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think the annoyance is gone for me, to be fair. I'm only a bit player in this whole thing. When I got the news at just before lunchtime today, I actually nearly had to check the date, you know, that it wasn't the 1st of April, to be fair about it. So I was kind of frantically trying to scroll back through the messages that we got and the emails that we got during the course of the morning and indeed the week as well for the EPCR to see what the protocol was going to be now in terms of whether the game could be played or otherwise. Obviously, you know, we got official confirmation from Leinster the match was off. We hadn't from the EPCR at that stage. That's just coming towards lunchtime. But then there's been a whole sort of bit of digging back throughout the course of this week as well, because there is now a fair bit of finger pointing from Toulon at the EPCR as to what are this about the calling off of this game and indeed the sequence of events during the course of the week. I think that's a story in itself. Officially, the match has been cancelled. Officially, there isn't any news yet as to whether, you know, what the result of the game is going to be. But if they go by what they've done previously, it will mean that Leinster will be into the quarterfinal next weekend.
Michael, as always with COVID, it can be quite complex and it is evolving all the time. Would you just give us a little bit of a timeline, really, on how this unfolded throughout the week? Because it wasn't just today that there was an issue.
Oh, no, today is the culmination of the entire week. And the one thing I will say, you know, from, you know, the work that I do and have done with Ireland and indeed with the four provinces here as well, is that they are PCR tested on a very, very regular basis, sometimes three times a week during the course of the Six Nations Championship. In terms of Toulon, their players were PCR tested in France on Monday. They got the all clear on that occasion. They were further tested on Wednesday and there was one positive case there amongst their group then. They informed the EPCR of that positive case, but they were given the all clear for a flight to Dublin on Thursday. So they flew to Dublin yesterday. They were PCR tested last night in Dublin, the entire squad. That's the playing squad plus management. Everybody came back clear, so that was all clear. And then they were looking for I'm just giving something else here. I'll read it in a second. They were looking for contact tracing information because the player who had tested positive had played in the front row. So it meant that anybody that he trained with and was up against during the course of the week, they were down as a known contact of that player, so it meant that all of the players involved in the front row couldn't take part in the game, and the position was, you know, they looked at the possibility of playing the game tomorrow, indeed playing the game on Sunday, but the problem is that they would have had to call in six front row replacements to start the match, and they'd have had to have you know, starters plus finishers there in terms of that, and it was deemed by the medical committee of the EPCR that it was unsafe for it to play the game, and the match was called off, and that's where they stood at this stage.
It is really a mess, and you suggested a little bit earlier that Leinster would progress to a quarter final against Exeter Chiefs or Lyon, and that is now confirmed, Michael.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to talk and read at the same time, which is never an easy thing to do.
Multitasking.
Thanks to Ronan for that. I felt, imagine trying to, if he handed this to Donica, he'd have probably crumpled it and thrown it away.
He normally draws me pictures, Michael.
Oh, does he? Okay, yeah. Well, there's two rugby balls in this one here. So we have official confirmation now from the EPCR. They've just released this literally in the last couple of minutes. I mean, the print is coming off of my fingers here. It says, as Toulon couldn't fulfil the fixture, the committee have decided under the terms of EPCR's COVID-19 protocol that Leinster will progress to the Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal that over the course of next weekend. So that's confirmation from the EPCR, literally at a minute past 6 o'clock.
Michael, that's in keeping what we know what's gone on in the past, but just from a whole competition point of view, do you think it jeopardises the integrity of it all now? I know we got a different formation, but if you look Wasps versus Clermont tomorrow, they'll go out, put in big performances, Leinster a little bit rested going into a semi-final. It's just not great for the whole competition.
It isn't, but the thing about it is that, Donica, everybody signed up to play under the terms and conditions of the competition, and we knew that this was a possibility, that something like this could happen. It's unfortunate, given the times and the pandemic that we're living in, that we have a truncated competition this year, and this was the formula they came up with, and they agreed a sort of set of further rules and regulations in terms of the teams taking place and taking place in this competition. They also set next weekend as the quarterfinals, so there wasn't any wriggle room at all. Actually, you know, whether they could actually transfer it to next weekend or otherwise. It's just when you're trying to juggle an inter-competition competition, if you understand what I mean, yeah, between the Irish team or the Pro 14, English teams, the French teams, and everything like that. The problem there is very, very hard to wedge another game in there. So, yes, I do have a lot of sympathy for Toulon. I suppose the question has to be asked: why were they given the all clear for the fly to Dublin? And they've come all the way. I mean, Toulon's a lovely place. Dublin's a lovely place. They've come all the way here, spent the night last night, and then wake up this morning eager for the match, and then they discover the match doesn't go ahead.
Well, Michael, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to study the fine print of that in case there's anything hidden there. We are going to take a minute to catch up on the League of Ireland and cross over to Bishopsgate, where Longford Town are hosting Sligo Rovers. Damien O'Mara is there for us.
And we're into the 24th minute, and I don't think too many people, when they looked at the fixtures a couple of weeks back, would have looked at this and said that the meeting of Longford Town and Sligo Rovers would eclipse that of Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk as the table-topping game of the evening. But we've got second against third in the table tonight, both sides with 4 points from the two games played so far. And both coming into tonight's game off the back of very impressive character-building performances last weekend. Longford recovering from 2-0 down to get a 2-2 draw away to Bohemians. Sligo recovering from the concession of an early goal to beat Waterford by 2-1 at the RSC. So no surprises that both managers have kept changes to a bare minimum this evening. One change apiece for Longford and Dara Doyle. Callum Warfield starting, with Sam Verdon dropping to the bench. From a Sligo perspective, Walter Figuera dropping to the bench, replaced by David Cawley, who captains the side tonight. This is the first league meeting of the side since October of 2016. It's been very evenly matched for the most part. Sligo starting to turn the screw somewhat within the past few minutes. Niall Moran with a shot that was scrambled away. Greg Bulger quickly following that up with a shot which was straight at Lee Stacey. The best of the early chances coming to Sligo in the 7th minute, an early free kick. Greg Bulger felled on the edge of the box just slightly to the left hand side. Robbie McCourt trying to bend the ball around the wall with his left foot, but finding that going wide of Lee Stacey's near post. The goalkeeper did appear to have that well covered. So we've just crossed into the 26th minute here in Longford. It's still Longford Town 0, Sligo Rovers 0.
Thank you, Damien. Now we're going to cross over to Tallaght Stadium, where Tony O'Donoghue is for the meeting of Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. Tony, Damien mentioned there that it is expected to be the big game of the night, but will it live up to its billing, do you think?
That's always the question. Although these two, they're not the big two anymore, you could say, because Bohemians split them last year. But certainly in terms of the recent history of the League of Ireland, they're the top two in terms of spending, in terms of winning, Dundalk getting to the Europa League, of course, and beating Rovers in the FAI Cup final at the Aviva Stadium. Rovers, of course, winning last year's truncated league, so they're champions. They've played, of course, just 3 weeks ago in the President's Cup, and Dundalk came through on that one. So, yeah, tonight's game is going to be very interesting indeed. But Rovers have to plan without the influential Roberto Lopez this evening. He's in COVID quarantine in a Dublin hotel, having helped Cape Verde to qualify for the African Cup of Nations. That was with a 3-1 win over Cameroon last Friday. Lee Grace is set to replace Lopez at the heart of the Hoops defence. It's an interesting one because, you know, he was preparing to come back on Saturday after the Friday game from Cape Verde, and the hotel quarantine only came in the day before, so it really has messed up Rovers' plans in that regard. Dundalk's Sonny Nattestad, who scored for the Faroe Islands in a World Cup qualifier against Austria, he's going to miss tonight's game. He was sent off in that President's Cup game in Talla against Rovers at the President's Cup, and he hasn't had an opportunity to work out his suspension in a way, because certain clubs or certain countries, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, are, as far as the FAI are concerned, it allows games to be postponed if you have players called up to those squads. But, you know, there are now more international players coming into the League of Ireland. Nattestad for the Faroe Islands, and Jarvovski of Latvia, who played really well in their three games against the Netherlands, Montenegro and Turkey. But you know, Dundalk couldn't call for those games off, so it is an anomaly, because you think if more international class players are coming into the league, like any other league, we should have an international break, or else we should at least allow those games to be postponed. So for Dundalk as well, Daniel Kelly's out, Sean Murray's out, but Jarkovski, I better learn to pronounce that better, because he's going to be a big player in the league this season. He should be back, even with the three games, the three full 90 minutes he played, according to Shane Keegan, the Dundalk manager. He's ready for the fray. I haven't got the teams yet for you, but certainly looking forward to this one. It is a big game. It kicks off at 7:45 here in Talla. It's live on RT2 television if you can get yourself to in front of a TV as well.
Tony O'Donoghue, thanks so much for joining us. So we're going to get back to the rugby now. Michael Corcoran is with us live in studio as we try to digest the Leinster and Toulon game being cancelled over COVID and everything else that is happening in between. Michael, there is a long way to go in this Champions Cup though, and this does set precedent.
Oh yeah, completely. I'm just looking through the statement. I mean, the members of the EPCR management team consider the facts regarding the cancelled match today, and following the advice, medical advice, that the game couldn't be played safely, Toulon were unable to select a matchday squad because of those high-risk close contacts with the player who didn't actually travel. So because they couldn't fulfil the fixture, it means that Leinster, as I say, are through to the quarterfinal of the competition next week.
And Tony, just from a player's point of view, okay, Leinster are getting rested, they are having that little bit of a break, but still, match sharpness does matter a lot when you are at this stage of the competition. But because they've played so much rugby, do you think it'll be a factor?
That's the one for me, Marie. I think this is brilliant for Leinster. Just we chatted about some of the players. We know Johnny Sexton didn't start last week, but he's massive mileage in the clock, picked up a bit of a bang to the nose. Myself and Michael were chatting about it earlier on, guys like Robbie Henshaw that have put in unbelievable stints. For them to go through without not even taking any contact or bangs or knocks, I think it's just a brilliant. It's really selfish, but from a player's point of view, you think, nice one, here we go, we march on, and we didn't even have to fire a punch. So they'll be all watching Wasps versus Clermont tomorrow to see who they, but already they can get ahead of it. Like, even video analysis work now, they can go into overdrive. I've no doubt they'll probably train today and get up to speed, but you can take the contact levels right down, and that's what you need.
Michael, what do you think?
I agree with him, actually, yeah. I spoke to Dunica this morning. Fellas like Robbie Henshaw has gone to the well so often during the course of this season for Ireland, during the course of the Six Nations Championship, and indeed, you know, for Leinster as well, particularly even last week, he's been absolutely terrific, to be fair about it. So it's a day of rest, for want of a better phrase. So it's a big one into the quarterfinal against the winners of Exeter or Leon. So it's you know, but that's an away game for Leinster, so a big one.
Donnacher, here we are feeling sorry for ourselves because we lost our live game, but there are a huge amount of rugby matches on and very good ones this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. There's great games even tonight. Gloucester taking on La Rochelle. Jenny, my wife, has given out to me. She's there. There's 20 other games. You just lost one of them. You know, get over
get
it.
Get over yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. But Michael, I'd be interested in your take because we got the Munster team news today. Peter O'Mahony's out. He didn't make it back from an injury to his quad. CJ Sander comes in to captain the side and make his 50th Champions Cup appearance, which is incredible out of him. Jack O'Donoghue joins that back row, and then there's changes to the front row with Dave Kilcoyne and Stephen Archer coming in instead of James Crone and John Ryan. We've been there, Corky, special days in Thomond, especially against Toulouse. It's going to be different tomorrow without a crowd, but Munster need a performance.
They do, and you know, the thing that worries me about the game tomorrow, firstly I'd say that that Toulouse team, Donica, absolutely terrifies me, particularly their pack. They've got really good, fantastic pack, great replacements, and that's not even mentioning Antoine Dupont or Romain Entemac. If we could have a crowd at any game over the weekend, it will be the match in Thomond Park, because I think the telepathy between the crowd and the players would be absolutely immense, particularly when you have a powerhouse like Toulouse coming to the venue. Munster need a massively big performance. It needs to be a huge improvement on last week. Munster will need to score tries. They'll need to stop the box kicking, because there isn't any additional points for box kicking, I'm afraid, in rugby these days. Munster are going to have to outscore Toulouse try time tomorrow afternoon.
So, Donegan, you mentioned the pack, and we spoke about it again yesterday with Stephen Ferris, the Toulouse pack. So if you step away from that, are there areas on the pitch that you think Munster have an advantage, pack aside?
I honestly don't, Marie. Like, they're such a powerhouse. Toulouse are really back. Munster need to play beyond themselves. And the example I'd give you is the likes of Joe Tacori on the bench for Toulouse. I played in a Babas game with him. He's one of the most skillful guys I've ever seen. He is coming in at nearly 130 kgs. And then everyone goes on about their X-factor players, the Chase and Colbys, you know, the Dupont, the Intermax, and they do light it up. But Munster are going to come up against a battle up front, and not only that, Toulouse have firepower on the bench, so it's all to do. But Marie, that's what you love as a Munster player. You're going in against these teams that, you know, everyone probably look at these teams on paper and say you shouldn't compete, but that's where you got to lift yourself to a performance that's worth it.
We know that the Munster teams of the past were capable of that, Donica, and we've heard some clips there in the opening, but do you think that this current squad are capable of emulating those Munster teams from the past?
Absolutely, and they've done it themselves. Like, I'll be honest, there was no prouder game I've ever been at than Munster versus Glasgow. The day after Anthony Foley's funeral, it was a really tough day, but that group of lads went out and put in a performance that I've never, you know, been lucky enough to be a part. Just what they did that day was incredible. So, yes, absolutely. These guys have done this before. But it's on everyone, Marie. It's on everyone to kind of come in. And we spoke about it, you know, and Michael and myself were chatting today. But, you know, going in at half-time there against Leinster, you know, it's a mindset as well, you know. And you just know the way the likes of, I hate repeating kind of guys, but the Ronan O'Gara's, the David Wallace, the Alec Quinlan's, they would love the fact that they're going in at half-time having underperformed and still be 6-6. You could see them grow, you know. So we need a little bit of that tomorrow. And Michael knows it better than anyone else. When you chat to Munster supporters, all they want is a massive performance. They want the players to go out and give it their all. And I think they will tomorrow. I think everyone will say that Toulouse are favourites, but backs to the wall in Thomond after last weekend, I would think Munster will come out rocking.
Michael, you're one of the lucky ones probably who's been to see more matches than most people for the last year. Have you seen anything in this current Munster team that proves to you that they can outplay outside themselves, above themselves, beyond themselves tomorrow?
They're going to have to. It's going to have to be their best performance in a long period of time. I mean, we've seen it in patches in some of the games. particularly some of the younger players. I thought Gavin Coombs was brilliant last week. I thought he was by far the best Munster player there. And we need now, rather than looking at some of the older fellas to kind of lead by example, we need the younger fellas. We need the older fellas to follow the younger fellas, if you understand. But we need big players, Munsterly big players, to perform on the stage tomorrow, because if they perform and perform like they can, they have a chance of beating Toulouse. If they don't, Toulouse will absolutely take them to the cleaners. And the thing is, like, there's a lot of pressure obviously on Munster, you know, given the fact, and a lot of doom and gloom after last week and the lack of performance in the final against a really good Leinster team. And, you know, the situation, the final score last week masks some of the Munster performance. Munster didn't play well last week, if Leinster had played well last week, Munster would have suffered a pretty heavy defeat. And if Munster don't play well tomorrow, they will suffer another heavy defeat, I'm afraid.
Michael, you'll be covering the match. There's also a Connacht in action as well. They go away to Welford Road, which is always a tough one, but they've named an exciting team. Paul Ball will captain the team from number 8, Ulton Delan and Gavin Thornbury in the second row, and an international front row, Dennis Buckley, Dave Heffernan and Finlay Beelum. This is a great opportunity for Connacht, isn't it?
It is, and you know, the funny thing about it is that Connacht's best form this year has been away from the sports ground. They've lost quite a number of matches in the sports ground. Paul Boyle's a good player. Gavin Thornbury is probably one of the unheralded players throughout the course of this year. I was delighted to see that he was named in the Guinness Pro 14 team of the competition. Ulton Delan having a really good season as well, and certainly against you know, against the opposition that you've mentioned, they themselves haven't gone very well. I think that both Irish teams have a good chance of progressing in that Challenge Cup.
Yeah, just on that, Cork, we've seen a few changes. The next teammate of mine, Mossy Lawler, coming in there, Colm Tucker. When there's a change in coaches, I noticed it when Alan Gaffney came at Munster, there's a spike from the players because there's the fear of the unknown. You don't know what these coaches... Do you think we're going to see a bounce in Connacht's performance? Now, we know Andy Friend is driving it on from the top, but having other coaches around him, that'll lead to a bit of pressure for the players to perform.
It's probably, it's different voices as well. You know, the fact that Colly Tucker is in there and Mossy Lawler also, I mean, they've been there or thereabouts in terms of being involved with Connacht before, so they've kind of, it's the old Liverpool mentality where they're promoting from within, you know, so there'll be a familiarity in terms of people know who they are, but they're different voices. Having said that, you know, Nigel Carlin and Jimmy Duffy have been absolutely terrific for Connacht throughout the last number of seasons. There'll be huge losses, and if the two fellas coming in can achieve you know, the same level of performance from Connacht going forward, they will certainly be getting used to some pretty bright days.
And we mentioned the other game, Jacob Stockdale will start for Ulster. He'll join Michael Lowry, who switches to fullback with Robert Balakoon. Billy Burns makes the side. He'll be at halfback with John Cooney, and Stuart McCluskey with James Hume in the centre. It's an incredible pack, with Rob Herring returning to join Eric O'Sullivan and Marty Moore. This disappointing thing here is no Ian Henderson or no Marcel Coutia, but Corky, when I saw the team that Gerry Flannery's Harlequins are sending, you wouldn't have much fear for Ulster tomorrow.
No, and you know, the thing about it, Dunica, is if you look at Harlequins even at full strength, you know, when I saw the teams that were left in the Challenge Cup, I was kind of trying to look at it from a Connacht point of view and then indeed from an Ulster point of view. And I think particularly if you're Ulster, you know, given the fact that they pushed Leinster all of the way in the Pro 14 and were desperately unlucky not to make it to the final of the competition themselves, ran Leinster very, very close in their section of the Pro 14. Ulster, I don't think, will fear anybody who's left in this competition. They're very well coached. Dan McFarlane is really a good and shrewd operator. They've got good players back. John Cooney, as you said, Billy Burns there also. And I really don't think that Ulster will fear anybody. I think both themselves and indeed Connacht have the chance of progressing, I believe, from this weekend into the next round of the competition.
Donica, just on the Challenge Cup, obviously it's not where everybody wants to be, but is it difficult for players to get motivated for it? Do they want to go and win it?
Yeah, we played in it one year and I remember chatting about it. We didn't know how important it was until we were out of it. And I think it's one of those ones, you see everyone, you want to be playing in the main competition, but as Michael said, these are quality games. If you know, going up against Harlequins, if this was a pool in a Champions Cup game, a Heineken Champions Cup game, everyone would be excited. This is a brilliant bit of silverware, and and especially for Connacht and Ulster to really go for it, because I agree with Michael, there's some of these teams, it's disappointing to see the likes of Harlequins, you know, put out that type of a squad, but you know, take every opportunity and try to win all around you.
And for everybody as well, there's a Lions selection looming.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and Marie, there's limited opportunity, and you just never know if you put in a big performance. We've seen bolters in the past that someone could step up. Michael, just on it, Hamish Watson was named today the Six Nations Player of the Championship. He secured 35% of the votes. And, you know, we've had Lions tours before where we haven't had many Scottish players, but with their performance as Six Nations, we could see a lot.
We could. I thought he was the standout player for me in the Six Nations. I thought he was brilliant in any of the matches that I saw him involved in. Now, you know, to be fair about it, Donnacha, you know yourself from the time when you were selected. You know, between now and the 6th of May, when the Lions squad is named, there'll be so many people giving their opinion as to fellas who are nailed on for the squad and nailed on for the test team. You'd nearly want two aeroplanes to take the whole lot of them if everybody was, that name was written down on a sheet of paper. It would be like Clive Woodward bringing the squad of 110 or however many it was to New Zealand when you were out there on that occasion. Where you saw, I remember having a conversation with Jordan Murphy, who was on the squad, and I said, something, asked him a question, how's Gordon Darcy? And he said, I don't know. He said, I slipped a note under his door to say we should meet for coffee because he's in one half of the squad and I'm in the other half. So we don't want a scenario like that, to be fair about it, John.
I'll be honest with you, Michael, it was worse. We were down in Invercargill, right down the very south, and everyone was at the games and at the training sessions. Where's Brian O'Driscoll? Where's Johnny Wilkinson? We were there. We haven't seen him in 2 weeks either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a decent spot, actually, Invercargill for that game.
Michael, it is disappointing we don't get to today's game, but obviously it's going to be brilliant matches. We have fingers crossed for all the Irish involved, but thanks so much for joining us and we'll catch up soon. Let's hope for a great weekend of rugby. Thanks, Corky.
See ya.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Donnacha, before we move on, I know that you plan on watching all of the 20 games that are on this weekend. For anyone who might not be wedded to which ones they watch, what would you say, Munster game aside, obviously, is the game of the weekend going to be?
I'm very excited, to be fair, just for La Rochelle. I think they're a sneaky dark horse. Of course, you're going to say you're going to look out for your buddy Ronan O'Gara, but I just think that'll be a brilliant game. They have to go to King's Home, play Gloucester, so that's actually on later on. Exeter taking on Leon as well will be a brilliant game. I do see Simon Zeebos and Mike Prendergast, Donnacha Ryan's Racing Metro being way too good for Edinburgh. But yeah, there is, like we were saying, I'd be really interested in that Leicester Tigers Connacht game. That'll be a brilliant, tough battle. And I think, unlike Harlequins, I'm disappointed with that team selection. I think Leicester will go for Connacht, but it could be a brilliant scalp for them if they could get it.
Okay, well, lucky enough, we won't have anything else to do for the weekend except watch TV.
Now, eat Easter eggs.
Yeah, good combo. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Greg Allen to tell us how Leona Maguire is getting on at the ANA Inspiration. I know she made a brilliant start. Greg, take us up to speed.
Yeah, she's doing very well. She shot that round of 67 yesterday. She birdied the final hole for a round of 67 and 5 under par left her one shot off the lead overnight. A surprise leader was Patty Tabatanakit of Thailand, who's ranked 103 in the world. So Leona's ranked 129 in the world, so it was something of a surprise to see those two players outside the top 100 in the top two. But Leona has just picked up today as though this is where she needs to be and deserves to be and probably might end up being near the top of the world rankings in professional golf. This is the woman who was 135 weeks the world number one amateur, and nobody has spent that many weeks at the top of the world amateur ranking, so we shouldn't be surprised that she's doing well here. She's tied for the lead, 6 under par. She's through 8 holes. Birdie the third at 389 yards. 12th hole because she started on the 10th, and she's just putted beautifully so far. Her ball striking has been good, but it's been her putting that has been keeping her in it. She's holed putts from between 5 and 12 feet in 5 of the last 6 greens, so that's great holing out. They're the type of putts which some days don't go in and you end up going spiraling down the leaderboard. But she's held them all and she's got no bogeys in her card. One birdie, really steady stuff. She's played 26 holes of a major championship in pretty difficult conditions in terms of how the course is set up, although it's a beautiful day again in California. But the course is difficult enough, hard and firm and fast running, so the balls are certainly being able to, you know, control the ball is more difficult in major championships. But she's doing all of that terribly well. And I keep saying, we shouldn't be surprised. Leona is class. And she's tied for the lead on 6 under par with four other players. Georgia Hall, the 2018 British Open champion. Araya Jutanagarn, twice a champion in major championships, a US Open and British Open winner. She's tied for the lead also on 6 under par. Mariah Jutanagarn, who's Araya's older sister, she's also on 6 under par. And Paddy Tavatanakit of Thailand, also in that tie for the lead. So it's a big bunch leaderboard. There's plenty of players as well on 4 under and 5 under, so it's very early stages. But Leona Maguire is right up there.
So, Greg, she's clearly playing with a lot of confidence. We can see that. And she's speaking with a lot of confidence as well. After her first round last night, she sounded great. She was so happy with how she had got on. Where is all this confidence coming from?
I think it's clear. Leona has just made a very nice transition to professional golf. It hasn't been something that has, she hasn't burst on the scene and started winning LPGA Tour events straight away. All through her career, from the age of, I think, 12, when she played in the Northern Ireland Open, which is a professional event, with her sister Lisa, she's made an incremental improvement all the way, and she's just got terrific self-belief, because this is the best amateur player the world has ever seen, effectively, in terms of the world rankings. And she's, she got her full LPGA card, full LPGA Tour season last season. The previous year on the Symetra Tour, the year that she turned pro, first full year as a pro, she won twice. This is all just incremental improvement by somebody who believes that she's going to be one of the world's best players. I did an interview with her on Radio 1 on Saturday Sport a few weeks ago after she was sixth in the Drive-On Championship. And she said her aim is to be the world's number one golfer. And that's where her mind is. So there is no feeling whatsoever that this form has come from anywhere other than the hard work that she's put in. And the hard work that she's put in has been considerable, because 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, her putting wasn't as good as it should be. And last year, the work that she put in left her top of the LPGA putting statistics. Over the winter, in cool and damp and rainy Ireland over the winter, she worked hard on making herself a bit longer off the tee. So she's got a strength and conditioning coach, she has her coach Shane O'Grady, who's known her since she was a child, and they worked on getting her speed up. Her club head speed, to get a little bit technical, was around 92 miles per hour this time last year. Currently it's averaging between 96 and 98 and touching 100. She said, when I did that interview with her, she said, I've just touched 100 miles an hour in my club head speed. That converts to around 2 to 3 yards per mile per hour. And that converts to around 20 yards longer than she was this time last year, which means she's going into greens with shorter clubs. If you know anything about golf, and it's a pretty technical sport, but that means that the ball comes in lands from a higher trajectory, which means it lands softer, which means you can access pins. And she has added length to her game, which means that she has now got an ability to attack pins that she didn't really have in her first few years as a pro. It's a learning process. And there is nobody better at learning and, applying and working hard that I have come across in the game of golf than Leona. And I include people like Padraig Harrington in that. And that's a fair compliment, I think. She is just absolutely assiduous.
That is a brilliant compliment, Craig. And what does she need to do this weekend? Obviously be in the running as we come up to Sunday, but, when the pressure comes on in those moments, do you think she has that temperament?
As I said, she's... You don't spend 135 weeks, that's the best part of 3 years, at the top of the world amateur rankings. Like, the world amateur rankings bear a very close resemblance to the world professional rankings about 5 years later, because, the entire best player pool of amateurs is in the American college scene. Most of them are. You'll see, Olivia Mahaffey coming through at the moment, Lauren Walsh doing brilliantly there. And if you can end up in the top echelon of the world amateur rankings, the chances are that the people you're competing against in college golf will be the people you'll be competing against in professional golf in 5 to 10 years' time. And that really is where she has learned how to win, learn how to be competitive at the top end. And when you're the best in the world as an amateur, you have a mindset that is that of being the best in the world, and that's what you want to do as a professional. And that's where Leona is pointed right now. Now, whether it works out or not is another question. But the whole building blocks that are in place at the moment indicate that she's on a nice trajectory, and this is a particularly good performance. Where it'll leave her come Sunday, we don't know. But one thing is for sure, Leona Maguire, whether she wins this, whether she finishes top 3, top 10, top 15, she'll have learned hugely from the benefit of being up with the likes of Jatanagarn, Araya Jatanagarn especially, and also Inbi Park, one of the greatest players of all time in women's golf, who at the moment is just one shot off the lead. And I think, you know, all of this is feeding into the general education of Leona Maguire, who's still only a professional 2.5-3 years very early in her career. And here she is, top of a major championship leaderboard, which is just fantastic to see.
Yeah, it's something to be very proud of. You mentioned the weather in California, but the course, how's it playing, Greg?
It's a beautiful course. It's been it's a traditional course for a major championship. This is what was called the old Dinosaur Tournament, which is a major on the LPGA for a long time. And it's now dried out nicely for a major championship. And this is one of the differences between LPGA events week in, week out. For major championships, when you get California climate, you get the course drying out, and they like to starve it of a bit of moisture, because a ball bouncing around for this level of control players is a much more challenging scenario than a soft golf course where their accuracy with the irons will just see the ball stop on the green where the ball lands virtually. This is a requirement to, you know, of skill. The firmer and faster a golf course runs, you think that makes it easier because it makes it shorter. In fact, for players with this level of skill, it makes it more difficult because the ball runs hard off a hard bounce and you just don't know how to stop it in some places. So it's a proper major golf championship setup.
And she knows it well as well, Greg. She mentioned that fact after in her interview yesterday after the first round.
Yeah, and look, she knows this course well, and she's learning all of the courses on the LPGA as time goes on. And this is hugely important that, you know, you find that within 3 or 4 years of being on the LPGA, you know all the golf courses quite well, whereas in the first couple of years, you don't know what's facing you. And she mentioned this in the interview, that with each season that goes on, she's learning more and more about how to play courses, which she saw for the first time last year in her first LPGA season. So yeah, and it clearly suits her as well, and she really does have her eye in on the greens, because the way that she's been putting is she's just dropping the ball in dead weight, beautifully weighted putts, and clearly she's reading them well. But as I said to you, she's worked so hard on her putting to make her the best putter on the LPGA Tour last season. So if you putt well, and the way that she's striking it with that extra 20 yards, and she's a consistent player, she is somebody to really be look out for if she stays near this top of the leaderboard after today's second round, and then she gets into the final group on a Saturday and final group on a Sunday, or final few groups on a Sunday. It'll be very, very thrilling to see this happen if it unfolds like it might.
Greg, it was also a good first round for Stephanie Meadow. How is she going?
Yeah, she isn't out until about 20 past 8 this evening, and she is on 1 under par, just outside the top 30. But like Stephanie Meadow, this is another example. Stephanie Meadow turned professional in 2014. Her first professional event was the US Open. She finished third. So, you know, Stephanie Meadow knows how to, you know, really get contend in a major from going back 7 years. And only at the end of last year, around November time it was, she was third in the Pelican Championship, which was an LPGA event, which matched her best other finish on the LPGA Tour. Stephanie is currently 119th in the world. Leona is 129th in the world. Around this time last year, they were both around the late 100s, close to 200 in the world. They are both heading in the right direction. And we've got two athletes, as we can call them, because that's what they are, heading to the Olympics. And, you know, it could be a major championship that one or two of them are going to be in contention for this year, or possibly an Olympic medal. And when you look at what's coming behind, and Olivia Mahaffey going very well in the Augusta National Women's Amateur, which has a rest day today because the players over in Augusta, they play the first two rounds at Champions Retreat in this Augusta Women's Amateur. Then they have a practice round today in Augusta National before the final round tomorrow. So today, Olivia Mahaffey is having a practice round in Augusta National, and she's lying third there. And as I've mentioned, Lauren Walsh, who's got club head speed of about 106 miles per hour, which rivals a lot of players on the PGA Tour in America, who'd be at the lower end, I suppose, of the speed stakes there. And she is a fabulous talent, ranked 25 in the world amateur rankings. And our women golfers at the moment are really upstaging the men who are coming through, because we don't have good representation in terms of numbers on the European Tour at the moment. We, of course, have Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy and Graham McDowell and Patty Carrington playing on the PGA Tour in America. But of the young players coming through, on the women's side of things, it's more exciting than it is in the men's, and it's not even close.
Greg, there's so much to look forward to now over the weekend with the two girls in the A&A and, of course, Olivia Mahaffey as well. But we're going to have the Masters next week too, and you will be on duty for us.
Yeah, I'm going to be on duty. Yeah, I used to be on duty over at the Masters. As you can gather, I'm going to be on duty somewhere within the environs of Montrose. But and this is going to be a new experience for me, although the November last year, Masters last year, was very unique, obviously, because it was held in November. But to cover a Masters in April from base here is going to be something I'm going to have to get my head around. But having said that, it's I'm really looking forward to it. Might see more of it.
We're looking forward to it as well, although I think last year we spent an awful lot of time talking about how the course was going to look different and feel different with the weather. But it's good to have it back, and it'll be great to have you back as well. Greg Allen, as always, thanks so much for joining us.
And if I can just add slightly, because Leona Maguire has just tapped in for par on the 18th, so she's halfway through her second round. She's 6 under par, and she was a little bit disappointed there because she had a 12-foot putt for birdie, which just slipped by, and it only just slipped by. But there you go, 8 pars, 1 birdie to the turn into the back nine. Leona Maguire tied for the lead in the A&A Inspiration.
That has a great ring to it, Greg Allen. Thanks so much. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. It is time to turn our attention back to the League of Ireland and to Damien O'Mara, who is at Bishopsgate for Sligo Rovers and Longford Town. Damien.
And it's half time here. One of those gloriously beautiful evenings for summer football. 14 degrees when the match kicked off, and having been in Oriel Park last week with about 5 layers of clothes on me, it's great to be sitting here waiting for the second half to start, and I'm not quite in my short sleeves, but certainly the jacket hasn't gone on yet. Anyway, half time here. The important fact is it's still scoreless, and Sligo Rovers must be wondering how they haven't gone in with the lead at half time, most notably because of a brilliant save from the Longford Town goalkeeper Lee Stacey about 4 minutes from the end of the first half. Sligo Rovers, one of the star players of the league, or certainly one of the most spoken about players of the league this year, Johnny Kenny, just 17 years of age, the son of Johnny Kenny Sr., who was part of Sligo's cup winning team back in 1994, massively regarded by the club, signed professional forms this year, found on the edge of the box by Romeo Parks. Kenny brilliantly creating space for himself and trying to place the ball in the far corner around a number of defenders, and it was saved brilliantly by Lee Stacey in the Longford Town goal. By far the best chance of the opening half. All of the good chances have gone the way of Sligo. Niall Morahan and Greg Bulger both going close. Robbie McCourt had an early free kick as well, which was just wide. Longford really only with one chance of note in the first half, that coming in the 10th minute. Dean Byrne with a volley under pressure, which went high and wide. So it is scoreless at half time. Longford could be left to count the cost of two first half injuries. They've lost both Dean Byrne and Callum Warfield to injury. They've been replaced by Callum Thompson and Aaron Dobbs. So two of Longford's substitutes used up already. We are awaiting the start of the second half in Longford, where it is still Longford Town 0, Sligo Rovers 0.
Damien, we were talking to Tony a little bit earlier and trying to predict whether or not Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk would live up to its billing. But a game that could end up being the one of the weekend is St Pat's and Bowes. Bowes not having the start that everybody was expecting.
Come on now. Talk about a stitch. Talk about a stitch up of a question. What club did you play for, Marie?
I knew he'd bite.
What
scarf
facts
is on your desk at work, David?
Well, no. My desk has been cleansed of all my personal belongings in line with health. No, okay. So, yeah. Well, yes, Bohemians, who probably haven't made the start of the season that a lot of people would have expected, particularly having been 2-0 up against Longford Town last weekend. Do you know, people talk about Shamrock Rovers and Bowes being the real Dublin derby, but there's always something a little bit spicy as well about, you know, Bowes against Shelburne, or particularly Bowes against St. Pat's, who would consider themselves to be the real north side and real south side inner city teams. So yeah, I put that to bed for, I will be closely watching it tomorrow evening. But it's like everything, as Dunica will tell you, from Munster's slow starts over the years, it's a marathon, not a sprint, Dunners, isn't it?
That's it. Time your run, Damien, isn't it?
That's it. It's about how you finish, not how you start, you know?
Right, well, I might remind you of that in a few months' time, Damien O'Mara. Yeah, thanks.
Don't be worrying. I'll be texting you now at 9 o'clock tomorrow evening. If Bowes do a job on Pats now, I'll be all over it.
Thanks so much,
you've stoked,
dude.
The bear, Marie. You've stoked the bear.
Now, the teams for Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk are in. Abibi in goals for Dundalk. Cleary, Boyle, Gartland and Gervoskis. Shield, Stanton, Dumigan, O'Kane, Hooban and Duffy are Dundalk's starting 11. Shane Keegan had said in his pre-match that everyone is chomping at the bit to try and redeem their individual and collective reputations after their defeat to Finn Harp. So there's the starting 11 that will have to do that when they take on Shamrock Rovers. And Shamrock Rovers have Manus in goals, Scales, Grace and Hoare are the back three there. Of course, Pico Lopez is in quarantine. Gannon, Kavanagh, McCann, Finn, Burke, Mandrew, and then up front wearing the number 9 is Aaron Green. So an interesting starting 11 there with no Pico Lopez in it. Okay, Donegal, it's time for some horse racing.
Absolutely, and we're delighted to be joined by our great teammate, Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
The sun-kissed part of Cork that I'm in, Dunica, had me pretty excited about the weekend.
Well, it's all round. I'm in the city here and it is absolutely beautiful. Shorts weather, Jane, isn't it? Really is.
Shorts and t-shirts, and that's coming from a ginger. So look, I think a lot of people for the Grand National were banking on a little bit of rain, because these horses are winter horses, a lot of them, who have their form built up over the winter. But there's changing conditions on the way, and I'm not sure the rain forecast is going to materialise, which could impede some of the results.
Okay, so we did get news today about the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National. We're chatting, of course, about Fairy House all this weekend. And Tiger Roll, Jane, what's going on?
Well, he's not coming to Fairy House, which is a shame for the Irish fans. He's going to Aintree, not in the Grand National, as we know. That's well publicised by now. He's going to run on Thursday in the Betway Bowl, the Grade 1, where he's going to potentially meet Clandas of Bow, Native River and Waiting Patiently. Look, it's been well publicised, we won't get too much into it, but Tiger Roll in a Grade 1 at Aintree. Be interesting to see how he gets on, but he's going to be over the birch fences and not the evergreen Grand National fences. It'll be something different.
Do you think this was the right call, Jane?
No, personally I think it's madness, but they own the horse. The O'Learys can do what they want. I think if he ran the Grand National, look, he'd have every chance of winning it. I know they obviously feel like the handicap mark is unfair, but Red Rum finished second, and there is no mean feat in finishing second off a high weight in the Grand National. I think it'd be much better than winning the Betway Bowl in my book.
And what about the fences that you mentioned there? Is it difficult to adjust to ones that you're not used to?
He's a very accurate jumper, and he's shown that his versatility in the cross-country discipline. He obviously just really likes the evergreen fences of the Grand National. It's a unique test. It's a race where he's really come to life in the past. So the fact that he's running back over regulation fences, it's often not been his forte, but we'll see.
So who'll be on him then? Talk maybe Jack Kennedy?
Yeah, well, obviously that's a question for the connections. I'd imagine it could be Keith Donoghue or Jack Kennedy. His regular partner, Keith, gets on so well with him. And obviously Davy Russell not back from injury yet. So they have their options. He'll be well ridden with whoever rides him. But he's an 11-year-old now, Tiger Roll. And I was looking forward, if he was going to Fairy House, to see how he would cope in the Irish version of the National. But it just isn't to be.
Yeah, we don't have him, but we do have 30 horses. And latest exhibitions, probably one of those that we'd all talk about. Jane, who do you fancy in this? Can you take us through it and maybe give us mark our card a little bit?
Mark our card for a 30-runner Irish Grand National. There's a reason Boyle Sports sponsored this race. It's a fantastic renewal of the race. There's super horses in here. As you said, Dunica, a late exhibition. He's been Monk Fish's follower throughout his novice campaign this year, but he is a Grade 1 winning novice hurdler. He's a very classy horse, and there's a reason why he's got top weight off a mark of 153. But it's going to be so difficult for him to justify that. I think that, as I said last night, the last horse to do that to win off top weight with Flashing Steel in 1995 for John Mulhern. But Brian Cooper aboard, he will stay. I'm just questioning, I think he'd like a little bit of rain to come. Willie Mullins well represented here, and JP McManus has five runners. I mentioned last night the big dog, Jamie Coddle, will be delighted that Tiger Roll isn't running, because now he's gone up 10 pounds and he can have a little bit of lunch tomorrow. And I would say 11.2 is a nice weight for the big dog. We mentioned him before, and he's a horse that is guaranteed to stay as well. Look, Joseph O'Brien well represented by Mortal, Home by the Lee, and Semple. I think 10.10 for Luke and Philip Dempsey is a great chance. But if I was nailing my colour to the mast, and I know that's what you're hanging on for, it is the big dog each way, because I just think he's a horse made, tailor-made for this race. He's won the Grand National Trial, and if any drop of rain comes, it'll help his chances.
And Jane, there are a couple of grade ones. We spoke about them very briefly yesterday because we did not have the official declarations. We do have them now. So talk us through the Underwriting Exchange Novice Chase.
Yes, so yesterday I was deliberating whether Energumene would be declared. He is not, unfortunately. The horse that missed the Arkle at Cheltenham is going to miss Fairy House as well. Hopefully we will see him back at Punchestown. But Willie Mullins is still well represented, as you would expect. Christmas Grade 1 winner Franco Deport, the mount of Brian Cooper, is the highest rated horse in the race. But I wonder his stablemate, Asterian Fernange, the choice of Paul Townend. He ran very well when third behind Chantry House in the Brown Advisory Novice Chase at Cheltenham. And I think going right-handed is exactly what he wants. He won his maiden, his beginners at Punchestown in November, and he beat Conflated that day. And this guy was very classy over hurdles. It's easy to forget how well he ran in the Supreme last year. He's a Grade 1 winning novice hurdler, and this might be his day to break his duck over fences.
Jane, stay with us. We're not done with you yet, but we are going to go back to Damien O'Mara at Bishopsgate. Damien.
And there has been the perfect start to the second half for Sligo Rovers. They lead in the 49th minute, a corner from the right-hand side, met by Romeo Parks. His header towards goal stopped on its way, but Gary Buckley there, quickest to react, to head home to give Sligo the lead. 49 minutes played in Longford. It's Longford 10-0, Sligo Rovers 1.
Thanks very much, Damien. Yeah. Jane, we'll get back to it. The EBF Mayor's Novice Hurdle, obviously another Grade 1. How do you think that'll go?
Yes, the 14 runners declared for this race. We anticipated a number of quick turnarounds from Cheltenham. So you have the likes of Galois, Glens of Antrim, Hook Up and Rosie's Hollow all turning around, as well as Sky from the Mayor's Novice Hurdle at Cheltenham. And I said last night, I just thought Atlantic Ferry skipped Cheltenham with this race in mind. We saw Henry Dewis with Honeysuckle a couple of years ago. It was in 2019 she won this race. Lorena and Jura's Girl Augusta Kate have all won this race. It's got a good roll of honour, and it'll take a good mare to win it. So Atlantic Fairy at the top is a horse I've a lot of interest in. Rosie Tallow, I hope, could run a very good race for JP McManus and Jonathan Sweeney. She travelled well through her Cheltenham race, just didn't get home, and I just think Fairy House, she's got course form, she will like the track. But again, this is a deep race. This is a very competitive race, as you would expect for a Grade 1. And don't dismiss Hook Up. The hood is on her for the first time. She's quite a highly strung filly, and I think that could bring out a little bit more improvement in the Willie Mullins mare.
Just before we finish up with you as well, Jane, you mentioned Cork there in the sunny weather, and Tolly Mullins is poised to unleash Princess Zoe.
Yes, isn't it very exciting to have her back? Obviously, a fairy tale story from last year, culminating in that brilliant Group 1 win at Longchamp, and she is starting her campaign in the Noble East Stakes. She is top weight, she's got 9 stone 9 on her back, but this is just the stepping stone to hopefully greater things this season. Look, she's got fillies like Tresha, Mal, Mighty Blue and Yakseni in there to beat, but I think all eyes will be on her. She's the top rated filly in the race off a mark of 110, and she's hopefully going to add to her already brilliant story.
Jane, thanks so much. Let's hope for a brilliant weekend of racing as always. Thanks, and we'll catch up real soon.
Thanks so much, Jane Dunica. Before we finish up, Munster, can they do it?
Can they do it? Yes, I'm in hope, Marie. Look, you just know the last weekend is the fuel, but something that lifts our spirit. We need to go beyond ourselves, but that's one of the days you love being in the Munster jerseys, where you need to go beyond and put in a massive performance.
Enjoy the couch this weekend.
Oh, yeah. What about you? Anything sticking out? I know you'll be glued to everything, but you must be happy. Liverpool are back. There's all
we mentioned. Well, I'm going to kick it off this evening now when I get off here and go home and watch Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. I'm really expecting a cracker there.
Very good, very good. Okay, brilliant. Thanks very much to Ronan and Laura Lee. The brilliant Blonde Tracy's up next with the official chart show. We're back Monday at 6.